Well, hello, and welcome back to Archaeology News Weekly. I am your host, as ever, David Connolly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now, the headlines from around the world are as follows. Spanish prehistoric sites are in real danger, a recent report highlights. We look into the mystery of the Nigerian Nok culture, and we come face to face with the earliest image of humans discovered in Scotland. China's founding legend may not be true is a startling new discovery, while in a recurring theme this week, we look at the effects of early inhabitants in coastal damage of the environment. 3,000-year-old butter is found in an Irish bog, well past its sell-by date, and did ancient humans cause the extinction of the pygmy hippo in Cyprus? Beneath the waves are clues to the Caribbean's earliest inhabitants, while more ancient stone artwork is discovered in Scotland. Art is still the subject matter with a 16,000-year-old figurine unearthed in Turkey, and a startling new investigation shows that early land clearance may have altered the global climate during the Neolithic. Additional information on the timber circle found in Ireland recently is made available, and at long last the ground is broken for a new park at the ancient Miami Circle. A 4,000-year-old tomb is found empty on Exmoor, while Australia's first astronomers are examined. We then finish with some news on the 10th anniversary of Badger and the creation of a new federation, and finish off with some news on sexy archaeology. A large number of prehistoric archaeological sites in the Valencia region of Spain do not have adequate protection and are open to acts of vandalism and stealing, a recent report has warned. The caves dating back to the Paleolithic period, located in the La Safor district, have no protection at all. All appear to have been forgotten by the authorities in favour of more modern causes such as Baroque churches, 19th century buildings and monuments that are less than 100 years old. The head of the archaeological services in Valencia said that the sites have no fences around them and lack any form of security. He added that the sites are very valuable when you consider the material that they may contain. Some of the artwork found on the walls of the caves dates back to between 10 to 30,000 BCE. In the case of La Peña Roja, which is discovered in the 80s, items found there date the cave to between 25 and 50,000 BCE, and there are suspicions that they were inhabited at least 500,000 years ago. Conservationists are calling for urgent action from the government to protect these sites immediately. Some 2,500 years ago, a mysterious culture emerged in Nigeria. The Nok people left behind bizarre terracotta statues and little else. Archaeologists are now looking for more clues to explain this obscure culture. Peter Brunig runs an excavation near the Nigerian highlands of Jos, where the Nok culture once blossomed. The tropical region they lived in was larger than Ireland, and its inhabitants lived in wooden huts and subsisted on porridge made from pearl millet. Around 500 BCE, the population exploded, and people that had been living a Stone Age-like nomadic existence suddenly settled. This has been described as a cultural Big Bang. With the help of locals, German researchers set up their base last spring, but in their excavations, the team encountered hardly any traces of life. There are no skeletons preserved in the earth due to the acidic soil dissolving the bones, and like their cemeteries, the temples and huts of the Nok people have disappeared without trace. No one knows what their farm animals, their streets or religious ceremonies were like, but the shards of clay statues are everywhere, on rock slopes, in ancient refuse pits and in open spaces. The largest of these impressive figures can stand up to 1 meter tall and resemble what might be kings or members of a social elite. Others wear horned helmets on their heads, and interestingly, a third of these figures are women. Scientists are puzzled about who could have created this collection of curiosities. How, they ask, could such a fanciful world emerge far away from the rest of the world's civilizations? Particularly perplexing is the question of how the Nok people smelted iron. Excavators have found iron bracelets, arrowheads and knives. when no sub-Saharan people made anything comparable at the time. Next winter, the high-tech caravan of researchers will move back into the bush with up to 40 excavation assistants, as to this day, countless Nok villages lie untouched beneath the earth. In Ungwara Kura, for example, the team recently came across more than 130 millstones, which suggest that there was once a large village there. For the time being, though, the purpose of the Nok statues remains unclear. There's no doubt that the Nok will continue to baffle us, Brunig says, and he adds that they are unearthing a magnificent new history of sub-Saharan Africa. Now there's a story to keep an eye on. A 5,000-year-old carving discovered in the Orkney Islands is being hailed as the oldest face in Scotland by archaeologists. At first glance, it appears little more than a tiny fragment of sandstone with a few crude scratches on the surface. Yet this precious object is the earliest carving of human form to be found in Scotland so far, and there are only two others in the whole of the British mainland. The face and its lozenge-shaped body measures just 3.5 by 3 centimetres, and they were carved on the Orkney island of Westray between 4.5 and 5,000 years ago. The enigmatic figurine had lain undisturbed in the earth at the Links of Notland, one of Orkney's richest archaeological sites, until just last week. That was when archaeologists, carefully brushing away the mud from a fragment of sandstone, found Scotland's earliest human face staring back at them. Careful examination revealed a face with a heavy brow, two dots for eyes and an oblong for a nose. A pair of circles on the chest are being interpreted as representing breasts, and arms have been etched on either side. A pattern of crossed markings could suggest the fabric of clothing. What the carving was for is uncertain, but archaeologists believe it may well be something to do with a ceremonial purpose. The lack of wear and tear suggests it was probably not used as a toy. With some of the objects found, you might think they had just been left behind, perhaps on a shelf, and then fallen down and become buried. But with something this fine and unusual, it begs the question as to whether it may have been deposited there intentionally, perhaps as some act of closure, after the Neolithic building's main use was over. The find preceded the discovery of what archaeologists believe to be the richly deposited skulls of 10 cattle built into the wall of a Neolithic structure that may have been attached to the main farmhouse. Some of the skulls are interlocking and all appear to be pointed upside down, with horns sticking into the ground. Remember that to get involved in archaeology, you would be well advised to check out this page I'm going to give you. It's www.orkney.uhi.ac.uk/courses/archaeology. There's been a growing international reputation for the quality of the teaching at UHI Orkney, and being surrounded by some of Britain's most important archaeological monuments and landscapes, including the heart of Neolithic Orkney World Heritage Site, where better to go and study. So if you're looking for a place to take up a course, then I'm afraid I'm going to have to recommend it. Have a look at UHI Orkney's website and study the courses they have available there. China's founding dynasty may just be a myth, say archaeologists. In a news report published in Science magazine, the writer Andrew Lawler surveys a decade's worth of discoveries suggesting ancient China sprang from a distinct region, rather than possessing a single national culture some 4,300 years ago. How China became China is no mere academic topic. It goes to the very heart of how the world's most populous and economically vibrant nation sees itself and its role in the world. Since 2004, archaeologists headed by the Wang Wei of the Institute of Archaeology of the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences in Beijing have begun tying together a broader picture of China's origins. Most of us accept that the Yellow River was the origin of Chinese civilization, but as they carried out more research, they found other cultural areas. In particular, the Xia dynasty, written about as the founder of the Chinese state by Confucius around 600 BCE, seems rather suspect. In 1959, Chinese archaeologists reported the discovery of the capital city of the Xia, dating from 2100 to 1600 BCE, but modern excavations and more recent dating are challenging its status. Although not even half complete, the project to find the origins of the Chinese civilization has already laid to rest the notion of an imperial China rising from the central plains of the Yellow River to bestow its gifts on the backward hinterlands. This is one of the ways that archaeology can change modern history as well. The idea that primitive hunter-gatherers lived in harmony with the landscape has long been challenged by researchers who say that Stone Age humans in fact wiped out many animal species in places as varied as the mountains of New Zealand and the plains of North Africa. Now scientists are proposing a new arena of ancient depredation, the coast. In an article in the journal Science, anthropologists at the Smithsonian Institution and the University of Oregon cite evidence of sometimes serious damage by early inhabitants along the coasts of the Aleutian Islands, New England, the Gulf of Mexico, South Africa, and California's Channel Islands, where researchers are currently carrying out fieldwork. Hunter-gatherers with fairly simple technology were actively degrading some marine ecosystems tens of thousands of years ago. And the researchers say, unless people understand how much coastal landscapes changed even before the advent of modern coastal development, efforts to preserve and restore important habitats may fail for the future. But not all the effects of the early inhabitants were negative. The scientists say when people in the Channel Islands hunted otters, they probably ended up increasing the abundance of shellfish. The researchers also cite systems of walls and terraces that people in the Pacific Northwest built to trap sediments and create habitats for clams, which they later harvested and ate. Dr. Erlandson said anthropologists in general were not used to thinking that people exploited marine environments before 4,000 or so years ago, when sea levels had been rising, that had been rising since the end of the last ice age, more or less stabilised. Much of the evidence of earlier coastal settlements has vanished under the waves, and in places where such evidence does remain, it has not always been recognised for what it is. An oak barrel full of butter, estimated to be roughly 3,000 years old, has been found in Gilton Bog, near Stapledown in County Kildare in Ireland. The amazing discovery of the barrel has been described by archaeologist experts in the National Museum as a really fine example, and it was found by two peat workers. The pair noticed a distinctive white streak in the peat and started to dig with their bare hands. They remarked, "We could smell it, and it was attracting the crows." What they'd found was an oak barrel cut out of a trunk and full of butter, largely intact, except for a gash towards the bottom caused by the peat harrow. It was upside down and still had a lid, something which has excited archaeologists. The barrel is about 3 foot long and almost a foot wide, weighing almost 35 kilograms. The butter's changed to a white adipose, which is essentially animal fat, the same sort of substance that is found well-preserved bodies of people and animals in peat bogs. At the moment, it's being dried out by staff at the conservation department, and once dried, it will be soaked in a wax-like solution, which will preserve it. It's thought that the butter was put in the bog for practical reasons rather than ritual. It's, of course, open to interpretation, but they're inclined to think that 3,000 years ago, they were storing it. Such a large amount of butter has been estimated to probably have been the harvest of a community rather than that of an individual farmer. Toast anyone? Returning to the damage early humans were causing to ecosystems, which of course seems to be the theme at the present, thousands of prehistoric hippo bones found in Cyprus are adding to a growing debate on the possible role of humans in the extinction of larger animals 12,000 years ago. First discovered by an 11-year-old boy in 1961, a tiny rock shelter crammed with hippo remains radically rewrote archaeological accounts of when this eastern Mediterranean island was first visited by humans. It's fired speculation of being the first takeaway diner used by humans to cook and possibly dispatch meat. It also adds to the growing speculation, controversial in some quarters, that humans could have eaten some animals to extinction. In Cyprus, it would have been the pygmy hippo, an endemic species resembling a rather large pig, which apparently vanished around the same time that people appeared on the island. Together with thousands of pygmy hippo bones, as well as several large birds and a few dwarf elephants, the archaeologists discovered man-made implements on the same site, pointing to a link between humans and the animals. Radiocarbon dating puts the site at around 10,000 BCE, some 3,000 years earlier than most scholars had assumed humans had arrived on the island. They say that the small groups of humans could have triggered an extinction of the animals, which was already under stress from cold and dry climatic conditions around 12,000 years ago. Many animals went extinct around the same time. There are two extinction scenarios, that they went extinct due to climate changes at the end of the Pleistocene, or that humans contributed to their extinction. Whether the humans that were using the Artikremos cave were permanent occupants of Cyprus or long-stay visitors is another matter still open to debate. It's likely that the hunters may not have lived on the island but were travelling in search of meat or other resources. Cyprus is, however, between 30 and 60 kilometres from the nearest landmass, and such voyages would have required considerable seafaring skills. Well, would it have been worth it for a hippo burger? A prehistoric water-filled cave in the Dominican Republic has become a treasure trove with the announcement by archaeologists of the discovery of stone tools, a small primate skull in remarkable condition, and the claws, jawbone and other bones of several species of sloth. The discovery is extended by thousands of years the scope of investigations of the Academy of Diving and Underwater Science programs. The virtually intact extinct faunal skeletons really amaze them, and what may prove to be a fire pit from the first human occupation of the island is just too good to be true. But now the lithics are authenticated, this may prove to become one of the most important prehistoric sites in the whole of the Caribbean. Charles Beaker and researchers Jessica Keller and Harley MacDonald found the tools and bones in 28 to 30 foot of water deep in a cave called Padre Nuestro. The tools are estimated to be between 4,000 and 6,500 years old. The bones might range between 4,000 and 10,000 years old. The three stone tools are made of basalt and limestone, and they were examined by anthropologists Nicholas Toth and Kathy Schick, who told researchers that the palm-sized stones showed unmistakable signs of human craftsmanship. Keller said local interest in the discoveries has been phenomenal. The cave where they were discovered, which is part of an aquifer and cave system that supplies water to nearby resorts, has been closed for research purposes. There's a strong interest in protecting it so that research can continue. And Scotland's done well in the artwork states this week, as more prehistoric artwork has been discovered by an amateur archaeologist at the Perthshire mountain range. The ancient carvings were discovered by rock art enthusiast George Curry at Ben Lawyer's near Loch Tay. Mr. Curry discovered a large piece of bedrock which has more than 90 cup marks. Some of the cups have rings around them, and a number of linear grooves can also be seen, with some still showing the individual blows of tools. Similar discoveries have been made in the area, but it's unusual to find so many markings on one stone. The purpose of the artworks are still unknown. Derek Alexander, archaeologist for the National Trust for Scotland, said that this is an exciting find as it shows that there are remains still to be found undiscovered in the Scottish hills. And if you're listening there, Derek, it's glad to see that the NTS property still has some exciting discoveries to be found. You'll know what I mean. I just have to say the word St. Abbs. Archaeologists unearthed a 16,000-year-old Mother Goddess figurine during excavations at Directly Cave in the southern province of Karamaras. Gaza University Archaeology Department lecturer said that the excavations in Directly Cave started on July the 15th this year. The clay Mother Goddess figurine that they found was 16,000 years old, and it showed that the social status of women at that time was once important. Until now, the oldest fired clay god or goddess figurine, unearthed in Mesopotamia, Anatolia and the Near East, were only made a mere 5,000 BCE, or 7,000 years ago. Once again, man gets the blame for global warming change. I told you this was a recurring theme this week, when massive burning of forests for agricultural for agriculture, thousands of years ago may have increased atmospheric carbon dioxide enough to alter global climate and usher in warming trends that continue to this day. This is according to a new study that appears in the journal Quaternary Science Reviews. Researchers at the University of Virginia and the University of Maryland, Baltimore say that today's 6 billion people use about 90% less land per person for growing food than was used by a much smaller population early in the development of civilization. These early societies likely relied on slash-and-burn techniques to clear large tracts of land for relatively small levels of food production. They used more land for farming because they had little incentive to maximize yield from less land, and because there was plenty of forest to burn, and in doing so, they may have inadvertently altered the climate. 5 years ago, one of the researchers, Professor Rudiman, made headlines with a hypothesis that humans began altering global climate thousands of years ago, not just since the Industrial Revolution. That theory has been criticized by some climate scientists who believe that early populations were too small to create enough carbon dioxide to alter the climate. According to projections from some models of past land use, large-scale land clearing and resulting carbon emissions have only occurred during the industrial era as a result of huge increases in population. But Rudiman and his co-author Errol Ellis, an ecologist at UMBC who specializes in land use change, say that these models are not taking into account the possibility of large effects on climate caused by early farming methods, something that we should at least seriously consider, if not listen to. As we reported previously, the remains of a timber circle more than 4,000 years ago had been uncovered by archaeologists in County Tyrone in Northern Ireland. Now additional details are emerging. The timber circle, found by the Headland Group near Ballygolly in 2006 and 7 as part of an excavation project linked to the A4-A5 road improvement scheme, is beginning to give up its secrets. Project officer at Headland, Kirsty Dingwall, said that radiocarbon dating had confirmed it was from around the middle of the 3rd millennium BC, although some elements may have been earlier. The specific use of timber circles is not well understood, but it's thought that it was used as a ritual site, perhaps for feasting or for commemorating the dead. The find is significant for archaeology and for Northern Ireland in particular, as very few timber circles have been fully excavated. It might seem that stone circles are more common as they survive better, but we're learning more and more about this type of site and just how widespread they were. The circle near Ballygolly was an example of a relatively rare type of site, dating from the Neolithic and Bronze Age, made up of two concentric rings of timbers focused upon a central area, which appears to have replaced an earlier series of large pits. It had a large monumental porch on one side with a line of substantial timbers along the front, which would have formed an impressive facade for anyone approaching the circle. The outer ring of the double circle comprised pits holding four posts in a square arrangement, which would themselves have pinned sections of wattle or planked walling in place. As a result, we can be fairly certain that it was not possible to see into the centre of the circle from the outside, unlike other timber circles elsewhere, seen elsewhere in the British Isles, or at stone circles such as Stonehenge in Wiltshire or Callanish in Scotland, where an observer would have been able to catch glimpses of any activity. As timber circles are generally thought to have some form of ritual importance, the issue of restricting views on what was happening inside the circle is an interesting one. And while on circles, we now cross the pond to the USA and the Miami Circle, a 2,000-year-old Native American site that taxpayers shelled out $27 million to buy 10 years ago. It may finally open to the public under a more frugal state plan that would create a low-key park around the ancient landmark. The $750,000 plan calls for a paved promenade around the 2.2-acre site at the mouth of the Miami River, a drop-off point circle for school buses and cars, and a small amount of landscaping and lighting, as well as a few interpretive signs. The circle itself, a carving in the limestone that archaeologists believe supported a structure with ceremonial uses, will remain invisible for now, because the state has neither a plan nor the money to display it yet. Instead, stones would mark the circumference of the circle, which is protected under several layers of fill. The sacred site was discovered in 1998, when a 1950s building was demolished to make room for a modern high-rise. A public outcry led county and state officials to purchase the land the following year. Well, only 11 years later, well, could be worse, could be Stonehenge. Though I have to confess, I wouldn't be all that impressed going to this incredible site and not actually getting to see it. There you go. Hopefully it will emerge in the future. Last week, in the bogs of Exmoor in England, a team of archaeologists started excavating a tomb which had not been opened for the best part of 4,000 years, or so they thought. It was only a couple of feet wide and filled with the soil of centuries. No one could possibly know what was in there. As it turned out, nothing. Not a single bone, a bit of bracelet, no cremation urn or any other piece of ancient ephemera. Not that archaeologists from Bristol and Leicester universities seemed too disappointed. Dr. Mark Gillings, who is senior lecturer in the archaeology at University of Leicester, gave a resigned shrug and said, well, it could have been a Victorian vicar who fancied themselves an archaeologist, or someone may have helped themselves to whatever was inside just after it was built. It was the first time a Bronze Age stone kist had been opened on Exmoor for more than 100 years, but the special occasion seemed lost on the dozen or so archaeologists present. They were too busy being excited when a tiny flint was found. This allows them to put the story into a real time frame. It puts it into the period of around about 3,500 years ago. The archaeologists were invited onto the moorland owned by the National Parks Authority because a number of extremely small standing stones had been discovered on the bogs. Dr. Gillings is used to bigger finds as he has recently been working at Avebury in Wiltshire, where the largest stone discovered weighs in at some 100 tons. Dr. Gillings gave a chuckle. We thought blimey when we first saw them, as he pointed at one of the 12-inch high baby monoliths. But it was when we started asking why are these stones here and what might lie between them that they started to make real discoveries. Something tiny can open more secrets than big ones. More Spinal Tap than anything, I have to say, though I have to confess that two of my favourite sites in Scotland are just as tiny. There's the Crawl Stones in East Lothian, where only when the heather is actually down can you spot them, and the amazing Hill of Many Stains. The clue is in the name there. There's a couple of hundred small stones about 8 inches high lying in a fan-shaped row overlooking the seas of Caithness. Worth a look, or at least a Google. Aboriginal people have been described as the world's first astronomers. The Yolngu people from Arnhem Land, for example, have dreaming stories that explain tides, eclipses, the rising and setting sun and moon, and the changing positions of rising stars and planets throughout the year. Astrophysicist Ray Norris has been gathering and listening Aboriginal stories about the night sky across the country. Surprisingly, these stories are very similar to Greek mythology. Dwayne Hamasher, a PhD student from Macquarie University, is also gathering Aboriginal stories of comets and meteors, often described as glowing eye of a celestial serpent flying across the sky, and seeing whether he can use them in conjunction with Google Maps to locate the site of previously undiscovered impact craters. He has found a story about a star falling from the sky and causing fire, death and destruction from a place about 100 kilometres outside Alice Springs in the Northern Territories, which seems to correspond with a large circular structure that he found on Google Maps. He has his fingers crossed, but when he looked at it, it's heavily eroded, which suggests it's millions of years old. But still, if they're able to find an impact crater based on a dreaming story, then it would be quite significant. However, much of the richness of Aboriginal night sky has already disappeared, says Norris. Some cultures have been so badly destroyed that it's impossible to see what's left. You just have fragments. Meanwhile, researchers are turning to journals and papers of early white Australians, such as explorers, missionaries and early anthropologists, as well as archaeological sites, to try and unearth long-forgotten records of Aboriginal astronomy. And now to that additional news. Well, taking Badger forward as an organisation, connecting archaeologists, whether an illustrator, ceramics specialist, academic, field worker, or even a student, we've come up with a place to talk, to network, share and discuss. Celebrating 10 years of Badger, can you believe it, and the influence it has had on the UK archaeology, The new Badger Federation is here to give all practitioners in archaeology the opportunity to influence the next 10. It's open to everyone, especially our European colleagues. So if you would like to join, just get yourself along to www.bajrfed, that's badgerfed.co.uk. And of course, I can't get away from the fact that time is ticking away and you've only got a few more weeks to enter the Sexy Archaeologist competition. So grab a camera, jump into the closest trench and strike a pose. You'll find more details of that at sexyarchaeology.org. Just look up in the top bar. I can't wait to see some of the entries. And unbelievably, Past Horizons magazine has been going great guns since we launched it year and a half ago. And the latest edition is now online. It's been up there for 10 days and has had thousands of hits. So if you haven't actually read it yet, what's keeping you? Get along there to www.pasthorizons.com/magazine. It's issue 9 and it is packed with amazing articles on Zulus, Bulgarian archaeology and the American Time Team as well. Can I also remind people that many new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities are available on the Real Badger. That's www.bajr.org and more can always be found on Stonepages. news.stonepages.com. Thanks for listening to Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you return again next week. Also hope you like the new music.